And now it's time for the Earth First Update, all the environmental news you can use from Free Radio Santa Cruz. And let's get started by asking you to round up a pencil and paper, because there might be something you want to write down, a web page, email address, telephone number, address, something that you want to do, because that's the whole point of this Earth First Update, is to get you to do something about what you hear. It's not enough just to hear all the bad news I'm about to give you. Some of it might be good, but if you do something about it, that's going to help. Let's start off with announcements. Friends of the River are still looking for volunteers for their Salmon Run for Rivers. Going to take place October 25th. That's coming up pretty soon. They need runners. They need paddlers. And if you can help them out, send an email to info@friendsoftheriver.org. That's info@friendsoftheriver.org. to let them know you're interested. Otherwise, go to their webpage, www.friendsoftheriver.org, and they will help you to run or paddle and get everything to Sacramento to save wild California salmon. Turning to news from Germany, the Hambach tree sitter suffers a fall in this story from the Hambach Forest, as found on the Earth First Newswire. Helicopter rescues fallen climbing activist. Climbing partner arrested without reason. On Monday, a French activist fell down from a 35-foot-high platform at a forest occupation near the clear-cut border of the open-cast mine Hambach. A helicopter brought the conscious accident victim to the nearby hospital. Another forest occupant was arrested by the police during the rescue mission. It was held at the police station in Duren for several hours without reason. For 3 years, activists have been protesting in the Hambach Forest against Europe's largest open-cast mine, which is located between Cologne and Aachen. Our year-long experience, tutorials, training sessions, international security standards show we are professionals. The security of the activists is our first priority, explains Nina Wagner, climbing trainer and forest occupant. The activists now want to clear the case completely and search for failures in the security procedures. It's the first serious accident since the start of the protest, which is held daily in the forest, elevated by at least 35 meters. Our activists know why they do their protest in the top of the trees. We are determined to resist the climate killer brown coal, even at high personal risk, continued Wagner. Though the rescue was successful, the activists were very concerned about the accident. She's in our thoughts, and we hope that she will recover from her injuries, says Wagner. After the fall, the occupants reacted quickly and started to immediately perform first aid. While one team took care of the emergency call, another removed the barricades, which are normally in place to prevent an eviction by police forces, to clear the way for the rescue team. In the future, more stringent security measures will be in place in order to avoid another rare accident like this. The victim, which was able to speak directly after the fall, was brought by helicopter to the University Hospital in Aachen. And if we get further updates, we'll let you know. Ska 7 warriors burn down Imperial Metals Ruddock Creek Mine Bridge in this story from Sequamak. Ska 7 warriors communique is found on the Earth First Newswire. With much discussion with elders, councils, and around sacred fires and ceremonies, the Sahuapak Tsk7 warriors have acted out of their collective responsibility and jurisdiction to and in the Tska 7 area by deactivating the Imperial Metals Ruddock Creek Mine Road. Imperial Metals Corporation never asked for or received free, prior, and informed consent to operate in Sequamak territory. The Imperial Metals Mount Polly mine disaster in the area known as Yekde Seksnuakne. The absolute destruction and devastation of our territory has never been answered for. No reparations have been made. Instead, Imperial Metals continues to force through another mine in our territory while criminalizing the Kablona keepers of the Tlan Nation, also exerting their jurisdictional and withholding consent from the same company. The genocidal displacement of the Sequamak from their homelands through starvation, fear, and assimilation by the state and industry being acted out by Imperial Metals stops now. We are committed to the ongoing protection of our territory. Our salmon is sacred, our land is sacred, our women are sacred, our water is sacred, and we, the peoples, the rightful title holders, are the decision makers, and we will protect them. Agreements made by elected chiefs and council do not have authority and do not represent us. This is a warning to Imperial Metals Corporation. Leave our lands and do not come back. This is the warning to the provincial government. You do not have jurisdiction on this land to issue permits to any corporation. This is a warning to investors, including the province, contractors, suppliers, and subsidiaries. Divest from or stop doing business with Imperial Metals Corporation. We, the Sekwepemc United, will not allow Imperial Metals Corporation to continue. The Sekwepemc law will prevail in our territory. And this is signed Sekwepemc Tiska Seven Warriors. And a North Fork of the Smith River drilling permit has been denied by Adam Spencer, writing for the Triplicate. A mining company's plan to perform exploratory drilling on the North Fork of the Smith River in Northern California and Oregon was dealt a blow when an Oregon state agency denied a request to use surface water for drilling. The Oregon Water Resources Department denied the application from Red Flat Nickel Corporation to use water for drilling after determining, quote, that the proposed water use will impair or be detrimental to the public interest, unquote, according to the final order from the Oregon Water Resources Department. Red Flat Nickel Corp. could still pursue exploratory drilling for valuable metals like nickel and chrome in its 3,000-acre Cleopatra claim site just north of the California-Oregon border and less than 1 mile east of the wild and scenic designated North Fork of the Smith River. But the company would have to fly in or deliver by other means water for drilling, or it would have to resubmit a permit to the OWRD to use surface water. Just downstream of the claim area, the North Fork Smith River enters California, where it provides a vast majority of drinking water for residents of Del Norte County. While the permit application was open for public comment, the Crescent City Council and the Del Norte County Board of Supervisors both voted unanimously to send letters of opposition to OWRD. Del Norte County residents have expressed their concerns to both the Board of Supervisors and Crescent City Council at separate public meetings, and it is obvious that this application is not in the public interest, the county's letter states. Many public comments asked OWRD to deny the application to avoid impacts to water quality used for human consumption. Crescent City's municipal water system withdrew 745 million gallons from the Smith River in 2013 alone. Other comments to OWRD voiced concern about potential impacts to the local economy, which relies on recreational opportunities like sport fishing, kayaking, and hiking on the Smith River. Concern was also expressed in public comment about the potential for road building and sedimentation to the river if exploratory drilling led to a full-scale mining operation. Grant Urschel, executive director of the Smith River Alliance, a local organization that advocates for protection of the Smith River watershed and has been organizing opposition to the mining proposal, was encouraged by the Oregon Water Resources Division's decision. We're pleased with the department's decision and will be interested to see what the next steps are by the mine proponents, Urschel said. The final order from OWRD lists agencies that also recommended denial of the water application. California Department of Fish and Wildlife recommended denial because, quote, the Smith River is one of two watersheds in California described as irreplaceable with respect to salmonid population resiliency and biodiversity. CDFW also asked for denial based on lack of water availability and the highest and best use of the public interest regarding the free-flowing nature of the Smith River, its high botanical diversity, renowned salmon and steelhead fisheries, and its wild and scenic status. The Oregon Department of Environmental Quality recommended denial because, quote, given the sparse data available on flows and temperatures, it is not possible to recommend appropriate conditions to mitigate the likely impacts of the proposed use on water quality and sensitive, threatened, and endangered fish species, unquote. The final order also notes that staff from OWRD visited the proposed site of water diversion on September 19th and found the flows to be effectively non-existent, preventing the agency from forecasting surface water availability over multi-year periods as requested in the application. and an endangered gray wolf has been pursued and shot by a farmer in eastern Washington in this story from the Earth First Newswire. The Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife is investigating a farmer after the shooting of an endangered gray wolf in eastern Washington. According to Associated Press, the farmer pursued the animal for several miles in his vehicle after seeing it near his farm, meaning that the wolf posed no significant danger. Wolf hunts have been institutionalized in northern states like Idaho, Wisconsin, Michigan, and Montana after the gray wolf was delisted from endangered species list in 2009. Facebook pages dedicated to wolf hunting have evidenced a sadistic pleasure that many hunters derive from killing wolves. The effect of official wolf hunts has been to normalize killing wolves to the extent that states without wolf hunts, like Washington, Missouri, and even Illinois, where the wolf is protected, have seen more shootings of their wolves. Last August, the first gray wolf seen in Kentucky in 150 years was shot out of hand. As well as the increased fervor behind slaughtering wolves, it is possible that wolf shootings are on the rise because the wolf hunts are pushing wolves out of places like Wisconsin, Michigan, and Minnesota, leading to an increase of wolf shootings in places that normally do not see wolves at all. Another factor is impunity. In recent years, those who have shot wolves in areas where those wolves are protected have claimed that they thought the wolf was a coyote because they are not used to seeing wolves. The Department of Fish and Wildlife usually lets them off with a slap on the wrist at most. To end the impunity and the terrible wolf hunt, some hunt saboteurs have taken matters into their own hands. The Wolf Patrol is currently monitoring the wolf hunt in Wisconsin after monitoring the Montana wolf hunt outside of Yellowstone National Park. In September, activists joined an indigenous-led prayer walk for the wolf from what is now called Oregon into Idaho, raising awareness about wolf hunts and holding demonstrations in the offices of the Forest Service and the Department of Fish and Wildlife. Stopping the wolf hunts will provide relief for the beleaguered population and will stop the bloodthirsty pursuit and killing of wolves in places they are already protected. And Interpol has joined in the hunt for a Kenyan poaching suspect. In this report by Joseph Akwiri, editing by James Macaria and Larry King from World Environment News Thomson Reuters. Kenya's police have asked Interpol to issue wanted persons alerts for a businessman accused of illegal trafficking in ivory and other game trophies in East Africa. They say Faisal Al-Mohammed, who hails from Kenya's Indian Ocean port of Mombasa, is behind an international poaching syndicate involving elephant tusks and was linked to a 3-ton haul of ivory seized in Mombasa last June. Poaching has surged in the last few years across sub-Saharan Africa, where gangs kill elephants and rhinos to feed Asian demand for ivory and horns used in traditional medicines. Kenyan police said they were working closely with Interpol, the international police agency, to have the suspect arrested. "We're looking for this guy, and we are aware that Interpol has put out his arrest warrant," Robert Kitur, Mombasa County Police Commissioner, said on Thursday. "We are working together and exchanging information so that we get him as soon as possible." Neither Mohammed nor his representatives were reachable for comment. Kenya has imposed stiffer penalties, longer jail terms, and bigger fines for wildlife poaching or trafficking, saying poaching is harming tourism, a major earner of foreign exchange. In January, a Kenyan court convicted a Chinese man of smuggling ivory in order to pay a fine of 20 million shillings, about $233,000, or serve 7 years in jail, the first sentencing since Kenya introduced the new anti-poaching law. And here in California, illegal marijuana cultivation sites have been cleaned up to protect endangered species. California wildlife officers have worked with several allied agencies and scientific personnel to clean up 6 polluted illegal marijuana cultivation sites to protect 3 species threatened with extinction. The sites encompass habitat of the federally endangered coho salmon, federally threatened northern spotted owl, and Pacific fisher, which was recently proposed for listing as federally threatened. Scientific data conclusively proves how pollution from illegal marijuana cultivation has further degraded habitat quality for each species and how bioaccumulating rodenticides, common to illegal cultivation sites, continue to acutely affect the northern spotted owl and the Pacific fisher. Consequently, the California Department of Fish and Wildlife applied for and received Section 6 federal funds earmarked to benefit such species to conduct cleanup operations after the sites were eradicated and secured. Wildlife officers from the California Department of Fish and Wildlife, the California Air National Guard's Counter Drug Task Force, and the Trinity County Sheriff's Offices conducted the raids and eradication of each of the six sites in midsummer and marked them for return and environmental reclamation. Growers are alleged members of one or more international drug trafficking organizations. In addition to polluting the land and water and destroying habitat, they represent a serious threat to public safety. Personnel from agencies work together to restore the sites to as pristine a condition as possible. They remove the entire infrastructure of the grow site, including rodenticides, fertilizers, pesticides, human waste, and garbage, in addition to thousands of feet of irrigation tubing. For more information, visit the website www.dfw.ca.gov. And here's the update from the Buffalo Field Campaign for this week. As the years go by, the Buffalo Field Campaign's drive to defend, protect, and restore wild migratory bison throughout their native landscape becomes increasingly more important. Critical, in fact, as we are the only group in the field working every night and day for America's last wild migratory buffalo. Wildlife managers, decision makers, politically influential livestock groups, and even some so-called wildlife advocacy organizations have unnecessarily created a serious and convoluted conundrum, which, if left unchecked and unchallenged, could spell the end of wild migratory American buffalo in the United States. Rest assured, Buffalo Field Campaign is here to both check and challenge any and every human threat to wild buffalo. A recent example of this gross mismanagement scheming against wild buffalo developed last week at an advisory committee meeting for an already doomed Montana bison management plan. Montana's statewide plan is separate from the controversial interagency bison management plan, though it, too, has been largely written by the people who oppose bison. The statewide plan aims to determine the suitability of restoring wild bison populations around Montana. Montana already has wild bison populations, the Yellowstone herds, which occupy less than 1% of the state's available habitat and are treated worse than vermin. At the meeting, the advisory committee concluded that while it would agree to consider buffalo as wildlife, they would not be welcome unless they were fenced in and not allowed to roam freely. The definition of wild is self-willed, uncontrolled, or unrestrained, and making fenced wildlife a clear example of an oxymoron, a statement which holds two opposing thoughts at once. Fenced buffalo herds, or buffalo game farms, are sadly very common throughout the United States and truly reduces the awesomeness Ice Age roamers to an undignified position of domestication and also prevents them from fulfilling their critical ecological role as creators of habitat, a food source for threatened and vanishing predators, as an absolute keystone contributor to thriving plant and animal communities in some of the world's most endangered habitats. Migration is movement. Fencing is containment of movement. As fall progresses and winter draws closer, the last truly wild migratory bison left in our country, the most important bison populations in the world, will begin to make their ancient seasonal treks as they have done for hundreds of thousands of years. There is no structural fence to stop them, but there is a political one made up of rifles, slaughter traps, and hazers. Buffalo Field Campaign will again be on the front lines where these buffalo choose to roam, and as we document the injustice and ignorance bearing witness to inexcusable brutality, we will continue to fight like hell for the buffalo in the public eye, the policy arena, and the courts. So long as wild bison still migrate and we are there to defend them, there is still hope. And they're seeking volunteers, Buffalo Warriors, for the approaching field season. Buffalo Field Campaign has seasonal openings for field volunteers. We have opportunities for every season, but are in great need of folks during our field season, which runs through mid-November through May, and is when wild bison are migrating into Montana. Any buffalo within Montana's borders is in danger of being shot on sight, hazed, or captured and shipped to the slaughterhouse. All volunteers are provided room, board, gear, and training. We cater to most any dietary need and do respect vegan and vegetarian diets. We are located in a warm log cabin by beautiful Hebgen Lake, just a few miles outside of West Yellowstone, Montana. And I can assure you, it is a most beautiful setting. Check the website for details, and we'll see you on the front lines. That webpage is www.buffalofieldcampaign.org. Once you get there, check out their What They Need page and send it to Buffalo Field Campaign, P.O. Box 957, West Yellowstone, Montana. Their zip code is 59758. If you have any questions, give them a call at area code 406-646-0070. And all this information and more can be found on their webpage at www.buffalofieldcampaign.org. The Buffalo Field Campaign is the only group working in the field every day in defense of the last wild buffalo in the United States. And South Africa is going to try a gunfire location system to catch rhino poachers in this story by Parashini Govender, editing by Ed Stoddard and Mark Heinrich, World Environment News, Thomson Reuters. Rhino poachers in South Africa now risk giving themselves away when they shoot thanks to a high-tech gunfire detection system being piloted in the country's flagship Kruger National Park. The stakes are high, for rhinos are being slain in escalating numbers for their prized horns, alarming both conservationists and the government, since wildlife in South Africa is an important tourist draw. ShotSpotter, a product of the privately held California company SST Incorporated, has previously been used in crime-ridden urban U.S. neighborhoods to alert police to weapons fire. In South Africa, it has already yielded the arrests of an undisclosed number of poachers earlier this year. The matter is before the courts, and park officials are reluctant to divulge details, saying it could possibly expose the location of the ShotSpotter array to other poachers. "This is my 14th war and the one I am determined to win," said Otto, a former soldier and UN peacekeeper who is now using his combat skills as Kruger's joint operations manager in the poaching front lines. As part of a pilot project, microphones have been planted in undisclosed areas of the vast Kruger Park, the size of Israel. When a shot is fired, the origin of the sound is triangulated and sent to the service provider in the United States. Coordinates are then relayed to a Kruger Operations Center within 30 seconds, making it possible to deploy rangers and helicopters with precision. ShotSpotter can detect gunshots up to 3 kilometers, about 2 miles away, somewhat less if the weapon is equipped with a suppressor, or what Hollywood movies usually call a silencer. On average, it can locate within 10 meters, about 33 feet, of the spot where the firearm has been discharged. The company says it is the first time the technology has been employed outside of an urban environment. Drones and other high-tech surveillance tools have also been used in the escalating battle with poachers, but the thick bush and high animal densities can thwart 21st-century technologies. Our opponents are skillful, formidable people who know how to navigate in the thick of night, taking cover under leaves and grass. You can't win this war with helicopters or drones. The bush is too dense, Otto said in his war room, plastered with aerial maps of the park sprawling across the country's northeast. More than 700 rhinos have been slain for their horns so far this year in South Africa, over 450 of them in Kruger National Park. More than 1,000 were poached last year, 3 times the tally of 2010, to meet soaring demand for rhino horn, coveted as an ingredient in traditional medicine and a status symbol in fast-growing Asian economies such as China and Vietnam. South Africa is the epicenter of the poaching surge because it has the vast majority of the world's rhinos. Elsewhere in Africa, elephants are being poached relentlessly for the ivory in their tusks. The latest census from Kruger shows it has between 8,400 and 9,600 white rhinos, and there are plans afoot to move 500 of them out of the park and hopefully out of harm's way. Most poachers slip into Kruger National Park via the 360-kilometer-long or 220-mile eastern border with Mozambique, one of the world's poorest countries, where poaching and trade in rhino horn provide an income to impoverished villagers. And here's some news of the wild and weird. A bug eruption so vast it showed up on radar. This past summer, a swarm of mayflies erupted from subterranean burrows in the river bottom mud of the Mississippi near La Crosse, Wisconsin. It's an event that typically occurs in three or four hatches during the summer along the upper Mississippi River, but this year all the hatches seem to have erupted simultaneously. The result, a swarm of insects so massive it was picked up on radar by the National Weather Service. Mayflies spend the first years of their lives in a larval stage, eating decayed organic material in the muck at the bottom of rivers. When the conditions are right, they erupt en masse through the river's surface into the evening sky, find a mate, lay eggs, and abruptly perish. And while it might be disgusting to be caught in a bug storm, mayfly abundance is an indicator of the biological health of the Mississippi River. The flies' eruptions create an all-you-can-eat buffet for frogs, birds, spiders, fish, and other insects. And unfortunately, that's all the time we have tonight for news on the Earth First Update. If you'd like to hear a rebroadcast of the Earth First Update, tune in to Free Radio Santa Cruz tomorrow afternoon at 3 p.m. Our program is normally aired at 9 p.m. on Thursdays. And go to our website at www.freakradio.org to find our stream. You could also go to Free Radio Edmonton, YEG Radio at WordPress.com. That's YEG Radio at WordPress.com, where the Earth First Update is heard at 2 p.m. on Saturdays and 10 a.m. on Sundays in Mountain Time. Or you could tune in 9:30 Monday nights to 90.3 KRFP, Radio Free Moscow, Idaho. Or anytime, you can go to radioforall.net. That's radio, the number, forall.net. And search for the Earth First Update or Earth First Radio News. Don't forget the exclamation point. And there you can listen online or download a podcast of the Earth First Update. And I'd like to also encourage listeners to support radioforall.net. Radioforall.net is a archive for independent and pirate radio stations to share their programs with other radio stations or to provide listeners with an opportunity to listen to podcasts 24/7, 365. The Earth First Update is a production of Earth First Radio and is produced in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz. You can find us on our website at www.freakradio.org. We want to thank you for listening and ask you to tune in next Thursday night at 9 o'clock for another edition of the Earth First Update.